so we start next lecture. Last time I started briefly to introduce geometrical operators, and I was talking mainly about the error operator. And the last thing I gave you was the complete spectrum of this operator. So now I want to sketch at least how you get this. So remember that we had a surface, and we subdivided the surface into small surfaces. And basically what was important that we took a sum over these small surfaces, and we looked at these kind of objects, Ej of block squared. Now, we know we already had a formula for Ej of block acting on a cylinder function, which was sum over all edges in the graph. Then there was some signature factor, sigma s and e. And then there was this rje. And then there was lp squared times I over 4. Oops, I'm sorry. So what we can do now, and there's this f gamma here. What we can do now, sigma of s and e was such that it takes the value plus 1 if the edge intersecting s agrees with the orientation of s, minus if it does, if it's opposite, and then there are the other cases which don't contribute. So we can take, we can write this as follows. I times LP squared or 4 times edges which are of up type, RJA, minus sum over all edges which are of down type, JE, F gamma. And now let me actually pull in a factor of I and a factor of 2. And let me call this whole thing here J plus, and I times this thing by 2, JJ minus. So now remember that RJE was simply tau j, a of e alpha beta d by d a of e alpha beta. And tau j is just minus I times sigma j, where sigma j is the Pauli matrix. Then you can calculate that j plus minus jk plus minus is equal to I times epsilon jkl jl plus minus, and jj plus jk minus is equal to 0. Just using this formula, you can show that. So what you see here, this is the algebra of angular momentum, familiar from elementary quantum mechanics. And this is why I suggestively introduced this notation J here. So what we need to do is to take this expression here and to square it. So if I do this, AG of block squared, then I get basically I get LP to the 4 divided by 4 times, J plus J minus J squared. Now this can be written as 2 times J plus j squared plus 2 times j minus squared minus j plus j minus j squared. Now this is the total angular momentum of the plus edges. This is the total angular momentum of the minus edges. And this is the coupling of the plus and minus spin. So this will take some values j plus times j plus 1. This will have spectrum j minus times j minus plus 1. This operator commutes with these two operators. That's also familiar from elementary angular momentum. And this one will take values in, let's say, j times j plus 1, where j runs in the interval from, well, takes values j plus j minus until j plus minus j minus. And this is precisely what I wrote down last time. So you see what enters here is... So you see that what enters here is basic angular momentum operator technology. Now, what I want to stress is that this is kind of amazing what is happening, because the error operator was a square root of, well, if you remember the formula, it was given by something like this, d2u. N S A E A J squared. Now, this expression involves a square root and involves two of these fields evaluated at the same point. If you try to make sense out of this thing as an operator on the Fock space, then you would not be able to do it. It would blow up. So it does not exist on Fock space. No chance. So we could say that this exists, this object, is our first harvest from background independence. Now let me talk about the volume operator. So classically, the volume of a region, three-dimensional region, is given by integral d3x over this region of the square root of the intrinsic metric. Or, as you can show, also by this expression, determinant of E. And now what you do is very similar to what you do with the area operator. You subdivide the region into cubes, hypercubes, and you try to make sense of the limit as you refine the cubes. And you have to somehow express the things in the intermediate stage where the limit is not reached yet in terms of flux operators again. So subdivide into cubes. Now wall of the cube can be written as follows. So this is a determinant of this 3x3 matrix, which depends on the cube, on this internal index, and on three indices Si. And this is just these are the boundary surfaces of the cube. So like this. So let's say S1, S2, S3. Well, and then you go very similar to what you did for the area operator. And you get the final formula. And I'm not going through this derivation in detail, because it's a little bit more complicated than for the area operator. The final result is the following. The volume operator acting on a cylinder function is given by, not surprisingly, the Planck length to the cube times the sum over all vertices which are inside the region, so which are in the section of the vertex set of the graph times and the region times little vv times f gamma and vv. Well, let me just put this LP cubed inside this one. LP cubed F gamma is given by the following expression. Sum over all triples of edges in E of gamma, then with the condition that they meet in the vertex. Then there's a sine factor again. Then there's epsilon jkl rj e arc k e prime rl e double prime squared f gamma. And there is a factor which I forgot to write here. I times over 48. And if you want, you can express this in terms of these angular momentum operators and try to study the spectrum of this operator. Now, this operator, we know that it has a discrete spectrum. However, the spectrum cannot be constructed as explicitly as it could be done for the area operator. So the spectrum is not explicitly known. In analytical form. And many of the calculational difficulties in loop quantum gravity come from this fact. Carlo was mentioning this yesterday. Now let me make some remarks about this, about these geometric operators. Geometric operators do not commute with all the constraints. They are SU2 gauge invariant, but they are not spatially diffeomorphism invariant, and they are also not invariant under the gauge transformations generated by the Hamiltonian constraint. Therefore, geometric operators are not observables. Therefore, it's a relevant, or it's a good question to ask, why do we consider them at all? The first reason is that especially the volume operator, as we will see, it does enter the construction of gauge invariant operators. So it's a kind of building block which you use in order to produce gauge invariant operators from non-gauge invariant ones. Another relevant remark is that the error operator of a black hole, as I will define it hopefully in the last lecture, is actually a Dirac observable. Black hole event horizon is a Dirac observable. So these are two pluses. There's one minus. If you take a non-gauge invariant operator and try to build a relational observable from it, so a fully gauge invariant operator, the spectrum of this operator might change. It might change very drastically. For example, it might happen that the spectrum, which was discrete before, changes into a continuum spectrum. So I would say that one has to be a little bit careful when one says that loop quantum gravity has a discrete structure at Planck scales, because this might change very drastically when you go to physical observables. Physical or relational spectrum might change. Okay, so this is what I wanted to say about geometric operators. Now let me turn to a new topic.
Sorry, question.
Yep.
We do not know analytically the spectrum of the volume operator. Do we know some qualitative issue, for
yes.
example, it has a volume gap or something like this?
Very good question.
High volume or
there is a recent work by David Rideout and my former student Johannes Brunnemann, who tried to get numerical results on this precisely this question. And if you take higher and higher valent graphs, like graphs with 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on, valent vertices, then it turns out that the smallest non-zero eigenvalue seems to be become smaller and smaller. So maybe there's no volume gap. There's an error gap, but there's no maybe there's no error gap.
And for larger values, do we know anything for larger values about crowding? I mean,
oh yeah, I mean the spectrum becomes rather dense for both the error and the volume operator at large eigenvalues. So you have some kind of correspondence principle.
Also, a question about the volume operator.
Yeah. I think this is no. You can't decompose vertices into smaller valent vertices. This is just a calculational tool. Right? I mean, what you do is you say, let's say we take a four valent vertex. You start with three edges or two edges, and you couple the spins on the edges to an intermediate edge, to an intermediate spin. Then you take that spin and couple it to the next thing. So you can think of this intermediate spin that you couple to as a new edge that you couple to the third edge. So, but this edge is virtual, it's not there. So this is maybe, I think this is a confusion. You cannot decompose vertices into three-level valent ones. this is just a calculation of, or illus- There's yeah, that's a good question. If you subdivide or if you regularize this volume operator a little bit differently, then the prefactor, so the prefactor in front of this what I just erased changes. It does change, but it can be fixed by a consistency argument. Namely, you can, on the one hand, you can construct the volume from the fluxes, but you can also construct the fluxes from the volume. There's a classical formula for both of these things, so you can go both ways. And if you insist that this works also at the quantum level, this is joint work with Christina Giesel, then you can show that the factor has to be square root 1 over 48. Are there any what?
Subtleties.
Subtleties.
Mm-hmm. Is choosing this cell decomposition, this regularization, choosing a state and then choosing the regularization, it seems to be a state dependent regularization. I mean, can anything go wrong because of this?
Why do you say that there's a state dependent regularization?
Yeah, because I choose a spin at full state, mm-hmm. so a graph, and I choose then.
There's some kind of averaging involved here, and the cases where this is not happening, that your vertex sits into a cell, is a kind of measure zero situation in this averaging
okay.
procedure. Yeah, the details of this derivation are not as simple as I sketched them here. So let me come now to the next topic, which is semi-classical states. And I want to stress that these are states which are semi-classical for at the kinematical level. So they are not gauge invariant states. And we don't want them to be gauge invariant, because what we want to do with these states is to solve the problem that Carlo was indicating yesterday, namely how to verify that the Hamiltonian constraint that we have is the correct one, or does it have the correct semi-classical limit. So this is work that I did with Winkler 7 years ago. There's work with Hanno Salman, where we applied these techniques to quantum field theory on curved space-time coupled to quantum gravity. There's work with Brunemann in full LQG, but studying cosmological situations, quantum cosmology. And there's work with Christina Giesel on the semi-classical sector of LQG. And in this work, there's an important progress, I think, on both issues that Carlo was raising yesterday, namely, on the one hand, calculational LQG, and verification of the Hamiltonian constraint. but we'll come to this in one or two lectures. So let me start with a very general framework for constructing semi-classical states, which is called complexifier. Framework. So the assumption is that the phase space is a cotangent bundle. This is our situation. And that we have a Hilbert space representation which is of the form that we have square integrable functions made of on this configuration space or a certain distributional extension thereof. And we want, so this is a very extremely rough definition of a complexifier. It's a positive function on phase space, or non-negative function on phase space, which we want to be infinitely differentiable in general, or sufficiently differentiable. Since we have a cotangent bundle, I know what it means to talk about momenta. So I want, in some sense, that C grows at least as P stronger than linearly as P goes to infinity, where P is some suitable norm on momenta. So as I said, this is very rough. And thirdly, that C over H bar is dimensionless. So what can I do now with this? I will give you an example that everybody knows in a second, and you will recognize all of this. What can I do with this? I can define a complex coordinate on my phase space by the following formula. So I'm giving you the case of just 1 degree of freedom, but all of this generalizes to many degrees of freedom, or infinitely many. Is there a question? Pardon me? It's reflecting, or?
No, I come to the first part because of the black dot, but it's not a problem.
Oh, okay. I see. So it's Z. Okay. So now, if you look at this formula, suppose you want to quantize it. So you want to put hats over it. Putting hats over it means putting hats over everything and substituting Poisson brackets by commutators divided by I times each H bar. So the formula would be Z hat equal to this one. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. So this is, this multiple Poisson bracket, where C there are n Cs Poisson bracketed with Q. And then if you do this n times, then you get n times the commutator. So you get this formula. And then there's a nice formula that relates this to a much simpler way of writing this, which is given by e to the minus c hat bar over h bar times q times e to the c hat over h bar. So here you see why I wanted the third condition, that c over h bar is dimension free. Otherwise, this exponential doesn't make any sense. Now comes the most important formula. Since we have the situation that we have an L2 space, I now have a notion of a delta function distributed at a certain point in configuration space. So let delta q be the delta distribution with support at q in C, define psi z to be e to the minus c hat over h bar delta q q to z. So this means analytic continuation. This is the same z as this one. So now let's do a very simple calculation, namely the following. I have the operator z hat sitting here. Now I want to know what is z hat times psi z. So you see that this first exponential kills that exponential, so we get e to the minus c hat over h bar q operator delta q q goes to z, but q is diagonal on the delta function, so I get a classical q which I can pull out, and I get z times psi z. This is the statement that psi z is an eigenfunction of z hat, and z hat therefore is called an annihilation operator. Good question. So these two conditions, especially this one and this growth condition, in general guarantee that this object before analytic continuation is an analytic function in Q. And therefore, this analytic continuation makes sense. So this is very rough, and I don't can give you the mathematical details, but one has to study this carefully in a case-by-case analysis. In particular, this is now an L2 function. An L2 function, you want this to be an L2 function given these conditions, so you have to check that. Want that this is L2. Now, it follows from this annihilation operator property that the following operators, A, which is z plus z dagger over 2, B, z minus z dagger over 2, I, satisfy the minimal or saturate. Saturate the minimal uncertainty principle or relation. So, in other words, the fluctuation of delta A times delta B is equal, not just bigger than 1/2 over A comma B. So this is anyway the minimal value. What?
May I ask a question about
sure.
this operator Z? So isn't it actually an assumption that the operator Z hat has this form?
This one?
Yeah. I mean, reasonable assumption, but it's...
This is one way of quantizing it. I'm just using...
Okay, this is what I mean. But this is
yeah. And again, probably you don't see the... You probably don't see these
because
dots here again. Pardon me?
One could
yeah, but I'm using this principle because I'm just replacing Poisson brackets by commutators divided by A times H bar. It's a reasonable assumption. And it's in all cases that one can has been studied so far, this has worked and reproduces the correct classical limit. So delta A, of course, is everything here is computed in with respect to these coherent states psi z. So for example, delta A z is given by A squared z minus A z squared. So now an example that everybody knows. So suppose you have a simple harmonic oscillator, which is 1 over m p squared over 2m plus m squared omega m omega squared q squared. Then we can define a length squared, which is h bar over m omega. So this has dimension of length. And we can consider the following complexifier, which is p squared over 2 m omega. And then claim that the coherent states that you get from this plugging this formulae into my formula, so now we are on L2 R dx, of course, and the delta function is the usual delta function. Then I claim that if you compute the normalized, so these are not normalized yet in general, if you compute psi z over the norm of psi z in this inner product, then this is equal to e to the minus, minus z squared over 2 e to z a dagger. The vacuum of the harmonic oscillator up to a phase. So you see that the harmonic oscillator can be phrased in this perverse language. And it turns out that every free field theory coherent states, like the ones that have been originally defined for Maxwell theory, also can be phrased in this language. So this is a very powerful machinery in order to produce minimal uncertainty states. By the way, the fact that we are talking here about that we take delta functions, which are in some sense are generalized eigenfunctions, which are complete in the Hilbert space, usually makes sure that these families of coherent states are in fact also overcomplete. So this has to also be studied in a case-by-case analysis, overcompleteness. Usually also follows. Interacting theories. For interacting theories, I'm not aware of any construction that gives you coherent states. I mean, it's a very difficult thing to really define an interacting theory.
It's a dynamical requirement.
What is a dynamical requirement?
To have a synchronous state for
Of course, yeah.
But in principle, it can be constructed, yes.
Well, I mean, look in the textbooks, how many four-dimensional interacting quantum field theories are there?
Okay.
Zero.
For elementary quantum mechanics,
take a very simple thing like the anharmonic oscillator.
Exactly.
I'm not aware of anybody who has succeeded to give coherent states which are, or semi-classical states which are such that they preserve their shape as you evolve them with the actual interacting Hamiltonian. This is a very difficult subject. I'm not aware of anybody who has succeeded in doing so. Well, if you could, yeah, you could do it also for Q squared. But here we have, here in this case we have the simple situation that we can consider the phase space as a cotangent bundle rows over configuration and momentum space. So this is not generally true for more general phase spaces. So now let us apply this to loop quantum gravity. And of course, I don't have time to give you sufficient details here, but I give you the result. So in loop quantum gravity, the delta function, delta A, which we need, is of the form sum over all spin networks, Ts of A times Ts. So this reproduces, if you integrate the delta function against any spin network state, you recover that spin network state evaluated at the connection A. So this is obviously the delta function here. Now, use certain complexifier involving the area operator squared. Why do I use this area operator squared? Well, because the area operator was given to us as a function which was kind of a square root of e squared. So if I take the square of that, then I get something to proportional to e squared. And e is the momentum. So this complexifier then will mimic this complexifier, which is also quadratic in P. So that's why you use this one. Then you get the result of the following form. Psi z is given to you as a sum over all possible graphs gamma, psi z gamma. And psi z gamma can be written in the form product over all edges in gamma, psi z comma e. So you see, I'm cooking this down further and further. And psi z of e is given by sum over all j 1 half 1 3 half to infinity 2j plus 1. So you can become really concrete here. E to the minus l e over 2j times j plus 1 times the character of, in the jth irreducible representation, of g of z times, well, a of e to the minus 1. L of e is a certain function which has these two properties. And now I don't only need to give you what is g of z. And one with respect to a certain graph, you can describe this as follows.
Is delta
L is actually dimensionless. But it has the properties of a length. So of course this depends on E as well. So if you are given a graph, you can think about some kind of dual cell complex. So consider a graph gamma and a cell complex dual to gamma. So what I mean by this, I mean something like that Roland was talking or will talk about, namely, given an edge in the graph, there's a face in the dual graph that intersects this edge in a certain point. And around the vertices of the original graph, it sits in the center of the cell complex, like this. So there's a tetrahedron around each of vertex. Yeah, that's basically all I need. Like this. So this is in gamma, and this is the cell complex dual to gamma. So it consists of glued faces. And
so if we have a vertex with higher valence, then it can be not in the tetrahedron.
It will be more complicated. Yeah. So that's why I'm not talking about simplicial complex. It's a cell complex in general. So then you construct the following object, GE of Z is equal to E to the tau J times G of SE times A of E, not. Because giving you a Z means that I give you a classical connection and the classical electric field. And now you can, for given edge and for given SE, SE is the phase dual to E. To E in gamma star, you can construct this thing, which now is an element of SL2C because of the I here. So this is the polar decomposition of this element of SL2C into a Hermitian positive definite matrix and a unitary matrix. And this is to be expected from the general formalism, because the complexification of SU2 is actually SL2C. Yeah, I'm going to be finishing in a second. So this is, I have really no time to derive all of this, but these coherent states, well, there are two things that I should mention before I stop. Psi Z, unfortunately, has infinite norm. This is because the Hilbert space is not separable. But one can work with this with these cutoff states, psi z gamma. And we will actually do this in a semi-classical approximation. The idea being, if you take a sufficiently coarse, fine graph, then this will be sufficient in order to study the semi-classical properties of the operators that you want to use. Now, and if you take this viewpoint, then it has been shown that these states have all the nice properties that you want, like overcompleteness, minimal uncertainty. Eigenstates of annihilation operators, infinitesimal Ehrenfest property. Okay, thank you. So I'll give you a classical, there's more or less one-to-one correspondence between solutions of the classical equations of motions and points in the phase space. Given a point in the phase space is giving you initial data, and then you evolve them, you get a solution to Einstein's equations. Now, these states, well, I should have said that here, they are peaked on such classical point in the phase space. So if you want, I could say that this kind of Courant states are a machine that gives you a classical geometry or a state which is peaked on a classical geometry. How much it is peaked, it will depend on the properties of the graph and how fine and how dense it is and so on and so forth. But this is a machine that gives you semi-classical states.
So the problem of extracting classical space-time from LPG is solved?
At the kinematical level, I would say yes. Mm-hmm.
With no interaction?
The interaction, of course, is provided by the Hamiltonian constraint. So these states, as I said before, are not, I mean, their purpose is not to be physical states, first of all. And secondly, for the very reason that we first want to make sure that we have the right quantum dynamics. Once you're at the physical state level, then you can ask, can I provide states which know about the interaction? But this is a second step, and that we are not yet at that stage. Thank you.